Hey, got the morning show with Aaron and John. Welcome back.
Thank you.
We are going to do a little bit of history. Whangaroa a century ago, and I just love it. The first sentence, let me give you the first sentence. Whangaroa News in 1924 was again dominated by debates over who should pay for roads, and it was the year when Bow Street lost its spacious lawns to provide parking spaces. John, this pretty much could have been written yesterday.
Yep.
With parking spaces and roads. Is that all it ever is? All it ever is?
Well, it's certainly been in the news most years since then, because it was really, it marked the year when roads became dominant, and it wasn't much later that the passenger service from Onehunga on the ship ended. We gradually saw the not just the gravelling of roads, the metalling of roads, but also the sealing of roads. So
where were the first roads being sealed in the country? Wellington or Auckland, I suppose?
Yes.
By the Parliament, I suppose?
Even some of the Hamilton ones were sealed around about the turn of the century, last century.
Okay, so that's when sealing started. Was it asphalt? Was it?
It was mostly concrete.
Mostly concrete. Yeah. It looked quite different. Man, that would have been... That's a big project in those days, a concrete road.
Yeah, that's why they didn't do all that many.
Yeah, wow. And then they discovered asphalting. Although it's not like that's... much cheaper.
Yeah, I'm not sure of the history of road covering when asphalt actually came in, but I think because it was a byproduct of the gas industry, so the gasworks produced tar, which would have probably been used fairly early on, I think. I'm not sure. Need to look it up.
John, you're a mine of information. Okay, so it was also the last year of typhoid deaths, the year Bryant Home opened. To Hurdaway School opened, which is not in existence, and William Petrel bought a store on Bow Street. Building of St. Peter's Church began, and what is now Wild Eatery was built, and where much of the bush at the top of the divvy was felled. Busy year, John.
Yeah, that's why I thought it was worth talking about, even though we're 3 months into the year.
Yeah.
But we've been busy for our other interviews, and we almost didn't make it this time, so probably need to carry on talking about it another time when there's not too much news.
So this is 1924. So typhoid deaths, can you give us some context for typhoid?
Typhoid had been quite a problem throughout the world, I suppose, up until the 1920s, and the improvements in hygiene during that time gradually got rid of it. So it was the last of the major outbreaks of typhoid. We still get occasional cases, which are usually contracted somewhere abroad.
Right. So, okay. And in fact, I remember being taught this in school, that people had migrated away from Europe because of all the health problems there, because everyone was living piled on top of each other. And they came out to this new world and took the land. That's another story. But as the urban areas started to build up, they started getting those diseases again, and I think there was a powerful motivation, like, you know, we've come all this way, and it's supposed to be not like back home, but it is like back home. So the public health measures, there was quite a powerful motivation for public health measures, is what I recall being told.
Yep, because the sewers had started to be improved in the big cities in the middle of the 19th century. Because they were having major outbreaks of not just typhoid, but cholera and quite a number of other diseases as well that were related to sewage. And by that time, medical knowledge had advanced enough to understand the causes of them.
This does put into perspective our problems with the wastewater here. Like, we're a long, long way. We're worrying about degrees of difference in a system that is so much better than it was 100 years ago or 150 years ago. What else we got? Raglan was still a small town of 330.
Yeah, because the typhoid, there were 10 cases in September 1924.
That's a lot for a population of that size.
So as you say, it's only just over 300 people. So 10 cases was, about 3%, I suppose. There was also a bit of controversy when one of the typhoid patients went to hospital, and then I think the hospital decided they couldn't do anything for them and they wanted to come back here and die at home. The police sent a constable to chase after them in a car, and it says the patient was overtaken at Tiuku and returned to hospital, where she died the next day. So
oh boy.
It was controversial in some ways as well.
So again, that puts something that puts into perspective the mandates that we had during COVID, doesn't it? I don't think was anyone pursued on their deathbed or their death journey. My God,
not that I ever read of. Yeah, but
yeah,
and it had obviously been the sort of legislation that had been around for a long time.
1924,
but it was brought into play, as you say, during COVID.
Yeah. I mean, this is just a few years after they recovered from Spanish flu. So I imagine they had all sorts of legislation in place in 1924 ready to go for such a thing.
Well,
and different attitudes too, I think. Different attitudes.
Because there weren't reports like that in the previous epidemics. The previous epidemics in Raglan had been in 1862, 1866, 1887 and 1897.
My God.
So 1924 was quite a bit away from those, but the last one with any significant number of people affected.
Okay. Small town of 330, yes. Population had tripled since 1900. So in 24 years it tripled. Now, you've said in the past that the boosts in population that Raglan experienced have followed on from changes in access, like transportation. So what had happened around the turn of the century that made the population boost?
Around the turn of the century, we had a reliable shipping service once a week coming down from Onehunga. And we also had the roads, which were getting better, but still had a long way to go. So by 1920, was it 1920 or 21, they finished putting gravel on the main road. So you had a gravel road all the way from Hamilton to Raglan, which meant that traffic could get through summer and winter and didn't have much problem. So that again made it a more attractive place to come to.
So does the population keep climbing steeply after 1924, the year we're looking at?
I can't remember the figures offhand.
John, I rely on you.
Yeah, I can remember most of these things, but not that one.
Yeah.
I can't remember when the actual... I did a graph of it once, if anyone's interested. I think I put it on the Wikipedia page for Raglan. So have a look at the Wikipedia page for Raglan. You'll see a graph there of population.
Okay. Can I read this from the Herald's correspondence? So this is, I am quoting here, okay, folks, just to be sure. He wrote that Raglan is awakening at last from a long sleep. During the native troubles, troops were stationed at Raglan in considerable numbers. The place prospered and land values reached a great height. They knew nothing. But with the end of the Maori War, which we don't call it that anymore either, which never actually touched the little town or its neighbourhood, came the end also of the period of boom, where formerly abundant crops of wheat had been garnered. Fell back into tea tree and weeds. Better roads, better boat communication, the great growth of cooperative dairying have changed the outlook. The good, in some parts splendid, motor road from Hamilton has made it possible for the dwellers in Waikato to reach Raglan in a two-hour run. So while they say that the land wars, which we call them now, never affected Raglan, that doesn't mean there wasn't land stolen out here.
The confiscation was on the other side of the harbour, not on this side of the harbour.
But people were losing land here through whatever scheme that they could cook up.
Well, there were native reserves set aside when the land was sold back in 1851. There's also a question mark, which eventually the Waitangi Tribunal is going to rule on as to whether the land was validly sold, because there were supposed to be four instalments to pay for it. And there's a question mark as to whether the fourth instalment was ever paid.
So which land is this we're talking about?
Where we are.
Oh, in town.
Well, not just in town, but right out to Tiuku. So all that land was sold for, my memory's going, 300 and something pounds back in 1851.
Even at inflation rates, I'm sure that wasn't enough.
A very small amount.
Yeah. And so they were supposed to be paid in four instalments, but they only got one of them? Is that what you said?
No, they got three of them. There are receipts for those, but there's not a receipt for the fourth one.
Okay.
So the question is, did they ever pay that fourth instalment? Which is I say, that the Waitangi Tribunal is looking at, and we'll see what their ruling is.
Boy,
eventually.
That could open up a can of worms. Okay, so So, yeah, Raglan awaking from a long sleep. John, I wanted to ask, even though the town was 330 people, I presume there were a lot more people, the rural area was a lot more densely populated in terms of the farming. The number of people required to work a farm would have been more.
Yeah, probably. I don't think I've ever seen any breakdown of the... And they've got figures for the whole of Raglan County, but not for the individual areas. It was quite a bit later that we got mesh blocks, and the mesh blocks measured population.
Yeah, so a mesh block, they broke the country up into tiny little parts so they could calculate things more accurately, but they didn't have them then. Now, it's said Bow Street lost its spacious lawns to provide parking space, and so here's the first photo of the town after that, where basically the grass down the middle, that's when that arrived.
Yep, the same.
Well,
boundaries.
Rather, it was always, it sounds like it was always there, but that got limited to that. So what did Bow Street used to look like before those grass strips
became the norm? A narrow grass strip down the centre, there was a single narrow traffic lane down either side of it, with the rest of it being grass.
So basically a track, what we would call a track today.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So there wasn't room for parking, there was just room for one horse and cart to go either side of the street.
And in this photo you can see the urgent need for parking. There's like one car, or maybe two, parked outside what I think
probably what is now the supermarket.
Yeah. So, they needed the parking, did they?
Well, they decided this was what a modern town ought to look like, with lots of road space. So, I think they laid it out with that. I'm sure that in those days, as you say, there was no parking problem, because you had a tenth of the population. So, you know, if you only had a tenth of the cars here today, you'd have rather more than are shown there, but still not all that many.
I have to say, while we have 10 times as many people, I think we have more than 10 times cars.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the number of cars on the main road, according to traffic counts, has doubled in the last 20 years. So that gives some idea of how much traffic's increased even just the last couple of decades.
So that's State Highway 23.
Yes.
So the population hasn't doubled in the last 20 years?
No, but the traffic has.
Mm, okay, all right.
Which means that we're travelling more and we're using cars more. Probably you're travelling more rather than using cars more.
Despite the fact that over that period, petrol has increased in price, it's tripled basically.
Incomes
haven't tripled in the last 20 years, have they?
Okay, maybe not.
I'm pretty sure they haven't. Mine hasn't. I can promise you that. In fact, no, I'm not going to go there. 20 years ago, I was working somewhere where I could get paid more than I do here, so that I don't want to dwell on that. Bow Street was set into its current pattern now. The only thing down the middle of the street, though, aside from the grass patches, I can see the cenotaph. We don't call it a cenotaph. What do we call it? The memorial.
The war memorial.
And no trees planted yet. But the Norfolk pines have been planted. There's some smallish Norfolk pines.
I think if you look carefully at that photo, you might see some saplings sticking out of the grass.
Really?
So I suspect that those might have... It's hard to make out, and I'm not dead sure. But if you use your imagination well enough, I think you can...
If I use my imagination, I can see anything.
You can see little tufts sticking out of the grass.
Oh, that's very... Yeah, but, that's a bit dubious, John.
Yes, I agree that.
But,
It was about the time that the trees were planted, which was, I think it was 1923. So,
okay. So, which trees, though?
Well, the current, not just the palm trees, but they also planted pahutukawas.
Yeah.
The pahutukawas were mostly chopped down in the 1960s.
Until, who was the lady who chained herself to the tree, the last ones, to stop them being cut down?
The one who ran the bakery, whose name was
Connie
Stevens.
Oh, Connie Stevens, okay. Yeah, and you did an interview with her a few years ago. We've got that somewhere in our system.
Yes.
That's a classic Raglan story. Okay, so what else can we say about Raglan in 1924? We haven't got very far. 2 hours to get to Hamilton, that was considered to be fantastic.
Yep, I can now cycle it in an hour and a half with an e-bike.
Yeah, that really puts it in perspective.
It gives some idea of how long it did take in those days to get here. Because the road was much more devious than it is now, so there were many more bends in it, and of course you can't travel as fast on a gravel road as you can on a tar seal road, even if it has got potholes in it.
In March there were tenders to form metal and culvert not only Bow Street, but also Hills and Monaco Roads and De Forman Culvert, Green, Wallace, Cliff and Main Streets.
Yep, so it wasn't just the main roads that were being improved, it was quite a few of the others as well. And that's a process which, even I remember when I first came to Raglan in 2000, that there were still some roads that were gravel roads, like Primrose Street.
East Street and Upper Bow Street, no, Upper Cliff Street.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were...
Upper Cross Street.
Sorry, there's no Upper Cliff Street. But speaking of Cliff Street, in December of 2024, Cliff Street was exempted from requiring owners along narrow roads to give up 33 feet for widening their road. So that's why Cliff Street is like it is.
Yes.
33 feet, 11 metres or 10 metres?
Yes.
That would be...
it's a standard road width.
That would be inside your front door, John?
That would be just at my front door, yeah.
Yeah. So I wonder
which is presumably why they decided not to do it.
Because they and they couldn't widen the other way because there was the sea.
Because Cliff Street was the original settlement in the centre of Raglan. And Raglan spread from the Bow Street end of Cliff Street in all the other directions.
Yeah, if you look at photos from pre this time, really, there were lots of pubs.
Until about 1900, it was the only part of Raglan, and there was an odd building here and there otherwise, like the Harbour View Hotel.
Because access was purely through the harbour and all the pubs were built along Cliff Street.
Yep.
Basically.
Except for the Harbour View Hotel, which in those days still had a harbour view.
And they probably called it the Harbour View to emphasise that they were still close to the water.
Yes.
So everyone knew.
I imagine so. I don't know.
Yeah, they were probably like, people were probably like, why are you building a pub around there? It's not even in the harbour, you know, on the harbour. Yeah,
it was at a road junction, so it was at the junction where people came in from Green Street sort of petered out, so I suppose there wasn't an awful lot of custom to be had by being on a road junction in those days.
So what you're calling Green Street, we now call Wainui Road?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was called Creek Street and Green Street and Wainui Road, so...
Creek Street?
Yeah.
That doesn't fill us with confidence, does it?
It went alongside the creek.
And flooded a lot, probably. All right, well, look, we'd love to tell you about the quarry, which you've got a picture of next. If you want to know more about the history of Whangaroa a century ago, go to raglan23.co.nz and search for, what did I put in? Raglan History 1924, I think.
Yep.
And that found it. So, that's there. John, should we be putting this on the radio station website as well?
I did suggest it back in January, but nothing happened. So.
No, I was on holiday. That's why.
Okay.
That's why. All right. Well, look, John, thank you for coming in. Folks, John's got his own show 6 o'clock tonight. And any plans yet, John?
As usual, no.
Are you going to talk more about your transport stuff for the regional council?
Yeah. Well, I'll probably go through the questions on the... both regional and national transport plans. Yeah.
So if you especially want to know what the government's trying to do or up to, or as far as they've got with their plans anyway, John will give the breakdown on that as well. So it'll be 6 o'clock tonight, 98.1 FM. John, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And end of the show for the day. I'll see you all again tomorrow morning.